Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another edition of the Niner Noise Podcast, part of the Fansided Podcast Network. My name is Robert Morrison, a contributor at NinerNoise.com, and here with me once again, man, we're excited about this. I know this is just coming across as your everyday run-of-the-mill podcast episode, but it is, of course, not. Here with me to talk about why that is the case is fellow contributor Akshaz Dividuila. Akshaz, man, how are we doing?
You know what? I think I exercised some personal demons watching that second half beatdown of the 49ers. But I will say that second quarter, that was like every nightmare of my fandom come back to me, reimagined.
Was there some yelling, maybe some choice words, because I know that there were at my house. It was an awkward moment because towards the end of the first quarter, so I had some friends, or end of the first half, I had some friends come over to just watch the game. They're fans of teams who were not fortunate enough to make the playoffs this year, and they had gone out. We ordered some dinner, and I had to stay home because it was the three of us and my son, who's a year old, and so they were like, "We'll get the food." Like, okay, cool. I'll stay with the baby, which makes sense. And so the end of the second quarter was just basically me going from, okay, cool, we took the lead in spite of the fact that we probably didn't play well enough to deserve to have the lead, to, oh my gosh, what's going on? Like, and then, you know, lots of yelling at the end of the second half, or at the end of the first half there. But it turned out okay. So that's good news. I don't know where at that particular moment, but that's where I was.
So I had a friend over as well for, I think they came by for the second quarter and they had to leave after that. And I was just, I was holding it in, like, as much like willpower I had to not like seem crazy during, but they left, and then the third quarter rolls around, and I think on the touchdown pass to Mitchell, I scream, like a guttural scream. I shocked myself with it too. And then I had a roommate of mine later in the day say, "So how'd the game go? Because I heard some noises," and I was like, "Yeah,
it's good." It was all right, you know, it was fine. It just turned out okay. So Niners win 41-23. In just a strange game, right? Like, the defense looked all disjointed in the first half. The offense, I don't know, it looked to me, and I think even the commentators were talking about it, it looked to me like maybe we were seeing the sort of fall to earth moment for Brock Purdy, who came out a little bit, you know, off kilter, a little clearly not himself. First playoff game jitters, certainly not out of the realm of possibility. And just, you know, you're just hoping, okay, this can't continue. Like, you got it. He'll figure it out. And he actually figured it out. In spite of the fact that the first half went so poorly, he figured it out, I think, a lot earlier than It might seem, even though it took the Niners pretty much the whole of the first half and then into the third quarter to take control of the game, it pretty settled down a lot faster than the score kind of appears. It was just the defense took forever to kind of sink its teeth into the game, and that was sort of the difference in the larger scheme of it. So, and then of course they will face the winner of Tampa Bay and Dallas, Tampa Bay Dallas, which at this particular juncture, we don't speak too soon, but that game is happening as we speak. Dallas is up 18-0. Yeah, 18-0. That's a real football score. Apparently their kicker has the yips and has yet to complete an extra point despite their scoring 3 touchdowns. So they're up 18-0 on the fight in Tom Brady's right now. Brady has not looked particularly good during the first half. And so it's looking like it might be Dallas, but you know, you never want to count out Tom Brady when the playoffs come. So, Aksha, has any sort of general thoughts about the game before we get into a couple of other things, and we'll get into the specifics after that.
Yeah. I just echo your point about Purdy, because for the first half, I really thought that was the worst he had ever played as a 49er. And it was a little concerning to me, just some of the easy throws he was missing, the lack of like cohesiveness the offense had, but he really did figure it out. And there's just something so comforting about Brock Purdy as quarterback, which I think is incredible to say given the trajectory of the season. But it feels like the offense is always going to find like a rhythm, always be in a groove some way, somehow positive plays will happen. Now, Seattle is not a very good defensive team, but you know, they definitely took advantage of what they saw. And I think defensively, it was a weird game for sure. And I guess my overall sentiment is just that in the playoffs, you really just have to win. And I think the 49ers did just enough. Well, they definitely did just enough to win. So, I mean, who knows against Tampa Bay or Dallas what type of game will be necessary, but it was a good team win.
Yeah, I think I definitely agree with that for the right across the board. And we'll get into some of the specifics of that here in a little bit. Before we get into the game in more detail, however, I think it's some notable things that came out of this past week. Some are related to the game, some are not. The first is the inaugural NFL Players Association All-Pro team, which is an interesting wrinkle that the Players Association has added to the mix of end-of-year awards that they're going to do. So, I mean, what does this mean? Before too long, are we going to get like 2 MVPs because the Players Association is going to want to have their own and whatnot? I don't know. So the 49ers had 4 players on that inaugural list. They just did 1 team. I think that's correct. So Kyle Juszczyk, Trent Williams, Nick Bosa, and Fred Warner, were voted, all pros for the NFL Players Association. Not terribly surprising there in any way, shape, or form. So Akshaz, I wanted to ask you 2 questions about this. First of all, what are your thoughts on this NFLPA All-Pro list in general? And then did they miss anyone from the 49ers that you're like, okay, that seems notable?
I'll take the second question first. I think they hit it on the head. In theory, the only other player I think you can make the real argument for is Christian McCaffrey. And I think if you give McCaffrey a full healthy year in the 49ers system, he would be first-team All-Pro running back, no matter what or who is voting for it. But Josh Jacobs had a pretty phenomenal year. And beyond that, I mean, the 49ers have a lot of good players everywhere. But if you had to ask me, who on the 49ers could you argue is a top 5 player at their position, or just a top 5 player in the NFL overall? And I think Trent Williams, without question, Nick Bosa, without question, Fred Warner, without question, and Kyle Juszczyk has been the best fullback in football for like his entire career, basically. So I definitely agree with the decisions. I don't really know who else I would have tried to squeeze in anywhere. Beyond McCaffrey, I wouldn't be able to come up with a good argument. whether or not this list should exist, I'm a little more, I mean, I don't see any like issue with it necessarily. I suppose given how important all pro like seasons become in discussing like tangible career accolades or Hall of Fame candidacy, I can understand players being a little like more engaged in trying to get some agency over it. Do I think it's particularly, is it going to matter a lot? No, not really, because I highly doubt teams are going to put in like any contract escalators or the like with the NFLPA's like voting system. So I think it's cool to see who other players think are the best in their position in a way that's like a little better than the NFL's top 100 players of X year, just because those rules are way more like easy to like game. A lot of people would put themselves first and their teammates, yada, yada, yada. But I don't know. I think it's just, it's a nice way to have some more discourse about players in the NFL. But I think so long as there's like a quote unquote more objective standard in the like Pro Football Writers, AP All-Pro, so NFL teams, this will always feel more like kind of like how the NHL has the Hart Trophy, and then there's another trophy. It's really annoying that I said this and I've somehow completely forgotten what the name of it is. But there's basically an MVP trophy that the NHL players specifically vote on. I think it's a little, I'm going to, so those are my thoughts. Okay. I'll swing it over to you, Robert, and I'm going to figure out what the name of this award is.
Okay. I'm not much help. Not a NHL fan. I went to an NHL game, to a Blackhawks game when I was in Chicago a couple of months ago, but that is the extent of my NHL time. Now I still get emails from them because, of course, I went to a game, so they're going to try to get me to come back. I'm like, I live really far away. I can't do that. Anyway, yeah, I think generally it's not really problematic as long as there's a very clear distinction about this is the NFL Player Association list versus the sort of quote-unquote real all-pro team. I think the sort of saving grace of it is that if you look at the Associated Press all-pro team and the players that got voted there, in terms of that list, it's pretty much the same group from the 49ers, save one or two players. And so I think that kind of helps it hold up a little bit. So that's something of note for sure. It would be nice for them to do a second team in the same way that the AP does, just to kind of match up a little bit with that. But otherwise I don't have a problem with it for sure. Speaking of the Associated Press All Pro list, that list also came out this week. Same kind of deal. Trent Williams was a first team all pro at tackle. Nick Bosa, first team all pro. Fred Warner, first team all pro. And then maybe the biggest surprise of the group is Talanoa Hufanga was voted first team all pro at the safety position. So we can get into that in a second. Notable that also two 49ers made the second team all pro. George Kittle, probably fueled mostly by the second half that he had with Brock Purdy at the helm, because he was having probably by his standards fairly mediocre season before that, with the injuries and everything. But the second half really fueled him. And then the other player that made the second team All Pro was George Odom, who made it as the special teams player. I believe this is the second time he's been voted to an All Pro team at that position. And the only other notable thing, obviously, the thing you notice that Kyle Juszczyk isn't there. They do not have a fullback on the all pro team. It's just running backs. And then they can put, I suppose, theoretically he could make it as a member of the running back team, but that would be particularly difficult for a fullback to supplant one of the many good running backs in the league. And the other thing that was of note is that Dre Greenlaw apparently missed making the team by one vote. He got 49 out of the 50 votes he needed. I'm not sure if that means he would have made the first team or the second team, but that seems a little bit of a bummer moment for me. But any thoughts on that group? Any misses in that particular area? How do you feel about that?
Oh, so Christian McCaffrey needed to be second team, and I don't think there's a real argument otherwise. Right. So that's one. George Kittle being second team tight end, I'm sure, like, given his second half surge, it's well justified. But my suspicion is that he would have gotten the position anyhow, because it seems when it comes to, like, the AP awards or all-pro teams, there's a tendency for some positions that don't have a very clear, like, outlier player to just fall upon, like, known, like, talent. And I think Kittle and Kelce, unless you have a player like Mark Andrews really step up in 1 year, it's kind of their positions unless someone steals it from them.
Yeah, it seems reasonable.
And then I loved Talanoa Hufanga's play this year for the first half. I thought, you know, he ran into a little bit of a learning curve in the second half. I don't really know the world where you can say throughout the entire course of the year he was one of the two best safeties in the NFL. He was certainly a very good safety, definitely deserving of a Pro Bowl or not. Second team, I could understand the argument as well. But yeah. I mean, like, if you look at what Hufanga did over the course of the entire year, and you compare it to Sean Gibson, in a purely, like, here's the raw stats, because Hufanga got into his position because of the, like, turnovers and big impact plays. Gibson's second half kind of caught him up in terms of interceptions. And then forced fumbles, Hufanga obviously. I guess my point is Hufanga is a playmaker and absolutely a talented player who will only get better. But that seems a little off for me. I don't know if I would consider him all-pro this year. And then, like you mentioned with Dre Greenlaw, difficult as well, especially because I don't know if Bobby Wagner was an all-pro this year. So, you know, I think the AP all-pro team generally has a – I think Trent Williams said this for the Pro Bowl, but this is kind of true for anything that gets voted on. You get in a year later than you were supposed to, and you get out a year later than you were supposed to. And I think some players for the 49ers, it's for Dre Greenlaw basically, got – kind of screwed in that regard.
Yeah.
And then final quick thought, just because I think we talked a little bit about this just throughout the year about how, like, marginal improvement on special teams was such a big deal. So I think it's absolutely huge that George Odum is a all pro. Absolutely, just completely changes the game in such small ways that you don't even notice. But if you think back to last week against the Seahawks, Danny Gray's special teams tackle stopping the Seahawks at the 15. It's just little things like that where you don't give a team a spark. Absolutely. That's what the best teams in the NFL do. They get their edges everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And so even if it's just maybe Odom, I mean, I'm certainly Odom was a particular standout in the position, but he obviously brought out the best in the rest of that unit. I think it's fair to say, you know, we've seen, obviously Oren Burks was also brought in as a key contributor in that particular case, but Demetrius Flanagan Fowles has been huge there. Sam Womack was a major contributor as a special teams player on the punt return team. You mentioned Danny Gray, these sorts of things, like creating that culture of like, hey, look, this is important too. Like maybe you're not a quote unquote starter on offense or defense, but this matters because it can make a big difference. Just, you know, just ask Jordan Willis what difference the special teams can make. He's still there. Consequently, the breaking news, Brett Maher is broken. he's the kicker for the Cowboys. They scored another touchdown. He missed another extra point. He is 0-for-4. Good news is it's not mattering because the Buccaneers are apparently terrible right now, and maybe the argument is made that they've been terrible all year, but they're losing 24-0 and no field goals have been kicked, so there you go, fun times. So maybe that's bodes well for next week's matchup. Small note on the injury front for the 49ers coming out of the Seahawks wild card matchup, again, they remain pretty healthy. Juwan Jennings, Samson Ebukam, both day-to-day. I think they have sprained ankles, basically. They both played through the game as far as they needed to. I think Ebukam came out, you know, towards the end when they basically pulled all the defensive starters. I think Shanahan said he could have played if the game had been on the line, but at that point, you just kind of let him sit and rest. And then I think Juwan Jennings posted a picture of himself lifting weights this week already. So he seems to be okay. So good place to be health wise. And then, oh, here's my, this, I was laughing at, I don't know if you saw this, but the pregame leading up to the game on Saturday, this wild take, if you could believe it, Jay Glazer comes in with the high fastball. To note that Jimmy Garoppolo would not be taking Brock Purdy's job if he came back healthy this season.
You know, I've had a couple of people. I've had a couple of people who haven't really followed the 49ers. Been like, oh, so Jimmy's taking over, right? And I'm like, no. Of course not. But it's good to hear. I think there's something kind of like really a little sad about this team and this coaching brass basically being in a position where you're so scared of quarterback injuries that getting Garoppolo back to be your backup is a legitimate, like, we actually need this to happen. That way nothing goes bad.
That's true. That is true. Why did you say that? That now I'm scared of it too.
But I mean, it's a, yeah, I mean, it seems like a format. There's just so much, and we can get into this as we talk about the game itself specifically, but there's so much cohesion between Kyle Shanahan and Brock Purdy in a way that's like, that hasn't been seen in San Francisco before. And that's a huge deal because the Shanahan offense is lethal when the quarterback knows what to look for. It, and this isn't like a dig at Jimmy Garoppolo. I'm not saying he wasn't like good as a quarterback, but there's an undeniable shift in how the offense operates with Purdy under helm. And part of that has to do with what Shanahan's willing to call. And part of that has to do with what Purdy's willing to like see and attack. And I mean, the results speak for themselves.
I think that's all right. And you know, frankly, if Jimmy's good to go, if we get to the NFC Championship game or the Super Bowl and he's good to go, and he, frankly, as you say, I would feel much more comfortable with Jimmy Garoppolo as the backup in case something happened to Purdy than I would feel with Josh Johnson. No offense meant to Josh Johnson, who has never shown the ability to be anywhere near the echelon of quality NFL quarterbacks, but yet somehow still continues to get jobs. So good for him. We should all be so lucky, but yeah, I mean, if it comes down to that, if Garoppolo is ready to go and what's Super Bowl's in a month, right? Roughly a little less than that. So if he's ready to go by then by all means, I would be much more comfortable with him as the number two, but frankly, it should not be a surprise that he's not going to get the job back, because if they get far enough, and I'm sure like 1,000 people have said this already, if they get far enough to the point where he's ready to go and Purdy has already taken him that far, why would you take the starting job away from the guy who's gotten you that point? Because at that point they'd have rattled, you know, what, 12, 13 wins in a row. Eight of them had come with Purdy at the helm, which is pretty impressive. So I said pretty impressive. Anyway, so let's go ahead and take that as an opportunity to move into the specifics of the game with things we like and things we didn't like. So, Akshaz, we'll start with you. Something you liked.
So, I think the thing I loved from the game is just the reemergence, because that implies that he went away, but basically Debo Samuel telling the world that I'm back and I'm a problem. Because I think one of the things that made Brock Purdy's success during the course of his six-game stint as a starter was that Samuel wasn't playing for the majority of it. But Debo is such a unique weapon in such an aggressive way. And when he's on point, this offense hits another gear because he has the ability to run after the catch, to just like attack the intermediate field, to like take a 10-yard play and make it 30, take a 2-yard play and make it 10, that other players simply just don't. In fact, I think the only other players who come close to it are on the 49ers with McCaffrey and Kittle. But just some statistics for you. Deebo Samuel, 3 rushes for 32 yards, 6 receptions for 133 yards and a touchdown with a long of 74. And it's just his presence on the field that scares defenses, that opens up holes. And you pair that with Christian McCaffrey, who, between the two of them, there's a real question as to who's the better runner and who's the better receiver. And I don't know who you would say is it for either, but it's such a dynamic weapon. And I think there's something to be said about a defense thinking they have all the answers going into a game saying, you know what, no matter what, we're not letting the Niners run with Christian McCaffrey. Like the Seahawks did. They really crowded the line, overcrowded the boxes. And they were like, you know, we're not going to let CMC get loose. We're going to make sure that they have to earn it. And McCaffrey obviously broke free for a long of 68 yards. But the 49ers were like, okay, you do that. Meanwhile, here's Deebo Samuel. See you next year. And if we do, in fact, play the 49ers, do, in fact, play Dallas next week, we might see a reoccurrence of what Deebo did against Dallas last year. Because defenses can say they want to hit players. Defenses can be aggressive. But it's one thing to say it. It's another thing when Deebo Samuel is running down the field looking to run into you. And there's just a gritty element to the offense he adds. So I was very, very appreciative and excited to see him basically come back and not miss a step.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, 100%. Right there with you. That is an impressive return to the fold. I mean, he played obviously against Arizona in week 18, but he was just sort of that was definitely a make sure you're good to go, like get you back, get some reps for you. Nothing, you know, nothing too crazy, but also make sure that you're ready to go and not hurt, kind of game. And so this was sort of his real return to the fold. And so, you know, he's a key player. And also I think it's pretty safe to say that the sort of that moment where where his leg got yanked, after a play, and the official is just like, oh, that seems fine to me. You just keep doing that. That was sort of like the spark moment to where the team was like, okay, all right, if that's how we're going to do this, then we're just going to kick the junk out of you for the rest of the game. They took that very personally, as Kyle Shanahan noted in his press conference after the game. You know, the team was like, hey, if that's the way they're going to play, then we're just going to just knock them out. And I think that was the turning point there. So not surprising at all. And I don't know if you saw what Debo said about it afterwards. He was like, I was fine. I was just going to basically, he was just like, if I got up, I was going to take out the entire team. So he was like, I was just taking a moment to collect my thoughts and control my temper, because otherwise I was going to get real mad. And Shanahan was just worried that he was hurt, which also I was as well. But I thought that was pretty funny.
I agree. I mean, that moment was so infuriating because so this is like conjecture, very biased 49ers fan speak here, but there's always been this like sense, especially when the 49ers of the 2010s would play the Legion of Boom. Games got chippy and probably over the line a little bit. And seeing kind of that re-unfold was like, come on, right? Like, what's happening here? So I was very excited that the team kind of took up the challenge off of that. I thought Debo had a great quote about it. He said it was like the definition of their team, I got your back. And seeing the team come together, I think, is a testament to the culture Kyle Shanahan has built in this locker room. And I mean, not to like make a comparison to demean or like point anyone else in a negative light, but you can compare that to what happened with the Colts and the Giants when Nick Foles got sacked and Kayvon Thibodeau's doing snow angels right next to Foles, who's almost convulsing on the ground, and none of the Colts are doing anything. I mean, not saying that the Colts have like no locker room culture or anything. I'm just saying I don't think the 49ers would let things like that slide.
Yeah, I think that's certainly right. So I'm going to go, I mean, there's a lot of different directions we could go with this, in terms of like the thing that I liked, the defense didn't have like their greatest game, but, I think it's awesome to see that the rush defense continues to be like a real problem. You know, they made a big deal in the pregame about, you know, Kenneth Walker, he's a rookie and he's having a great year. And they kept saying about how he, you know, when they beat them in week two, that he wasn't really featuring in the offense yet. And then he was hurt when they won the game on Thursday night, you know, later in the season. And that like, he was going to be a key cog in the game. And he ends up carrying the ball 15 times for 63 yards with a long of 9. Obviously he had that nice touchdown early in the game and all that, but I read a stat the other day and I was trying to find it while you were talking. I don't remember exactly what the number was, but there was like 250 something, I don't know if you saw this, 250 something rushers throughout the NFL that rushed for 70 or more yards in a game throughout this whole season. And Akshaz, do you know how many of those came against the San Francisco 49ers this year?
0.
Exactly. Which is just like wildly impressive, right? Like 70 is actually a fairly low threshold, right? Relatively speaking. Like if you had a 70 yard game, like depending on how many times you carry the ball, you know, it might be okay. But generally speaking, because if you carry the ball with any great frequency, 70 is not like a super high number, right? But the fact that they didn't have anybody rush over 70 yards on them all year long, and they faced the number one running back in the NFL and Josh Jacobs a couple of weeks ago, and he had, I think he was the closest. I think he got to like 65 or something like that. That's just incredible to me. And the fact that, you know, and it's pretty clear that the game plan, once it became obvious that the weather was not going to be as much of a factor in this game, that the Seahawks certainly kind of relied on the passing game more than the 49ers defense expected them to. It seemed like there was definitely a clear sort of like, oh, okay, they're throwing the ball kind of look to the early part of the game. But the fact that they're able to snuff that out, and I think to a certain extent you have to take into account that yes, they towards once the middle of the third quarter happened, they had to sort of give up on the run altogether. But the fact that they ran the ball, let's see, 25 times for 104 total yards, 28 of those were scrambles from Geno Smith, who had one 11-yard carry. It's pretty impressive, and as they continue to move through the playoffs, hopefully, obviously, it looks like Dallas is going to be the opponent next week. They obviously have present some challenges in the running game for the 49ers that will be interesting to look at. If it's the Eagles the week after that, or even if it's the Giants, they present some interesting problems from a running game perspective. So that running defense and their ability to control the game in that way, it's going to be really important. And it just continued to be impressive on Saturday against Seattle.
I agree. I mean, so Seattle's rushing stats, 104 yards on 25 carries. And with 28 of those coming from Geno Smith scrambles and designed runs. And I think you can make the case that this was probably one of the worst rushing defensive approaches the 49ers had all year, and they still held Seattle to 4.1 yards per carry, which is pretty good, all things considered. Kenneth Walker only 63 yards. I mean, it's especially important when you think about just in the NFC and hypothetically playing against the Eagles or the Giants, two teams that are going to run the ball and are going to try to attack the 49ers defense. It's a real strength, and it's only getting better as Kinlaw gets more and more accustomed to being back in the lineup. So I totally agree. It was a bright spot for the defense, for sure.
All right, so we'll use that to transition into the down, the thing that we didn't like. We'll start with you, sir.
So, I mean, it's hard. So criticizing is kind of difficult because it's a divisional game, plus the playoffs, plus a lot of expectations given the kind of run the 49ers had been on. But DK Metcalf, 10 receptions, 136 yards, 2 touchdowns. That's not great, obviously. And it's especially not great because Tre'Davious Ward had a pretty rough day. And again, looking ahead to the Eagles, or then you get into the Super Bowl potentially and you're going against Kansas City or Cincinnati, you have elite players and offenses that will attack you deep. And, you know, Metcalf is a physical specimen, and it's not the end of the world that Ward had a rough game. Sometimes it happens, but the Eagles love to take cover one, cover three shots against single isolated corners. And if you have AJ Brown and Devontae Smith running deep the entire game with a pretty good accurate passer in Jalen Hurts, it could cause some problems. I don't think it'll be a huge deal in the grand scheme of things. I think the 49ers generally have been very, very good about kind of having these defensive aberrations where one player gets loose be an aberration. But in a game of mostly positives everywhere, it's kind of annoying to see Seattle get a lot of success throwing the ball down the field.
Yeah. It's definitely an annoying, but just because of his, I don't know, the persona of DK Metcalf too. He just kind of rubs me the wrong way in a lot of ways, but that's my problem. Certainly problematic. In this particular case, of course, you get away with it because if you look, Metcalf had 10 for 136 and 2 touchdowns, including that 50-yard touchdown early in the game. But then if you look on down the rest of the line, Cade Johnson, 3 catches, 39 yards. Tyler Lockett, 6 for 39. Colby Parkinson, 3 for 14. Derek Young, is that how you say that? 1 for 11, and then Noah Fant, who was the big piece of that Russell Wilson trade, other than the draft picks, as it turns out, because Drew Lock is sitting on the bench. Also 1 catch for 11 yards. So in this particular case, they're able to get away with it because it was just sort of it's that situation, you know, when you like in basketball where they talk about, you know, that guy's going to get his points. The job of the defense is to figure out how to make sure that nobody else does too. And so in that case, you just like, okay, it's annoying. You don't like to see it. You know, you hope that that's not indicative of some problem later on, but you live with it, especially because of the way that the game ends up. But by and large, I do agree with that. And the thing I didn't like was certainly on that same level. It's just that the defense it seemed like it just took them a little too long to get into the game. And I don't know if that was a familiarity thing, like, oh, we think we know what Seattle's going to do, and then they did something different. Or, as I alluded to earlier, the weather was supposed to be really bad, and it didn't end up being a problem at all. So you got to wonder if they were geared up for something a little bit different, like, oh, they're going to try to run the ball to control the clock or something like that. I don't know, but obviously giving up 17 points in the first half was not great, but they only gave up one more touchdown throughout the rest of the whole game, and really only 6 more points, so it wasn't really a problem. And then of course the offense picked it up in the second half, scoring 7 points in the third quarter, and then 18 in the fourth, just for fun, right? So in that case, it didn't turn out to be a problem. But again, giving up that 17 points in the second quarter to a team that you had controlled from an offensive perspective or from a defensive perspective in the other two matchups is a little bit concerning. Now, the familiarity will not be there for the most part throughout the rest of the playoffs as you move on. When they play Dallas next week, they haven't seen Dallas. And they saw them last year, obviously, in the playoffs, but they didn't play them this year, so that you don't have that familiarity thing. If it's the Eagles or the Giants, similar kind of thing. And then there's nobody on the AFC side, really. None of the AFC teams that are left, aside from the Chiefs, are teams that they play this year. So maybe that will help a little bit. I think maybe there's a sense that you know them a little too much, and so you think you know what they're going to do. And that I think that could play into it a little bit from that perspective.
I agree. And just in terms of some of the defensive issues, especially in that second quarter, obviously it doesn't matter now because the 49ers won handedly. But Jimmy Ward, and I love Jimmy Ward. I think he's been underrated and increasingly integral to the 49ers defense since he's been here. Made one of the dumbest plays of the season for San Francisco when he dove into it's those things throughout the season. There was discussion of the 49ers defenses being at the level of the Legion of Boom, the 85 Bears, the 2000 Ravens. And I don't think they're at that level. And this is not like to say that the 49ers defense isn't very good, but more often than those defenses have, they're just these moments of like mortality or just like poor decision-making. Dre Greenlaw's angle on Kenneth Walker's rushing touchdown, for example, Jimmy Ward's tackle attempt on Geno Smith. It's just things that happen that you just don't think a defense as good as the 49ers should do. Now, football is a 60-minute game, and one thing the 49ers have shown, with the exception of the Kansas City game and the Raiders game, and most so the Kansas City game, is that they'll be able to put in an effort at some point in those 60 minutes to like make a play when they need to. But you know, it's interesting because, like you said, divisional game, kind of weird, not going to really be the case. In fact, I'm fairly confident assuming the Cowboys hold out in whatever they're doing. The only other team the 49ers could play that they've played before is Kansas City. It'll be interesting because I think, and this is also positive in some sense, the defense is becoming more of a problem spot, not because of that, because Brock Purdy has been so good and consistent on offense. We've reached the stage where it feels like easy to the 49ers offense. So the question now becomes, how's the defense going to play? Because the offense will get you points. And that's incredible to say from week one to now, but I think that's where we are.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I think, and we could talk about this as a, not to like as a jinxing kind of thing, but if you think back to the 2019 team a little bit, is some of what happened there was the defense fell off just a little bit as the playoffs are going on. And I think this happened in 2012 too, when they went to the Super Bowl and play the Ravens. Like, that defense was really good as well, and but their playoffs were struggle. Like, they struggled throughout the playoffs, especially once they got to the Super Bowl. They gave up a lot of points to that Ravens team that was, you know, like, it had a pretty good playoff run, but up to that point had not really been like an offensive juggernaut by any stretch of the imagination. And so maybe the defense is not going to be able to be like world beaters, but they need, if they can be good enough, to the offense seems to be able to hold up their end of the deal. And we've talked about this all year, right? That question of, you know, the question was, the defense seems like it's going to be good enough to keep them in pretty much any game. Is the offense going to be able to hold up its end of the deal? And recently it's kind of flipped a little bit, but the defense has also dug its heels in, and, you know, they've had moments like the first half of this game where they've struggled, but then they gave up 6 points, and the 6 points that they gave up were literally in the last 2 minutes of this game, that were, you know, it was a garbage time touchdown at the end of the game that didn't matter. You can live with that. And so if this is the trajectory, like they can continue down this line and probably beat a lot of teams, even if the defense is not like elite. So I think that is something to pay attention to. Score update, by the way, the Tampa Bay scored a touchdown. But this might be the first game in NFL history where no team has completed an extra point. They scored a touchdown and went for two and missed it. So it's 24-6 with zero extra points and zero field goals. So funny thing.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's going to be interesting. I think the 2012 parallel is interesting to me. It almost feels like, in a way, like 2019, where the defense kind of let up as the season was ending, but had flipped a switch in the playoffs. Now, that switch is relative. The Vikings were not very good that year, and the Packers were the Packers. So I think, I don't know, it's gonna be a really interesting kind of progression for the 49ers, assuming they continue to win these games. If you just think about how it'll happen, because that 2019 Super Bowl, for 50 minutes, they were basically there. They had Kansas City locked down. And then they let up a little, and the offense couldn't, like, carry its weight. And I think, not to project too far ahead, but just in general, a theme for the 49ers defense, or just the 49ers under Kyle Shanahan, as they've, like, from 2019 on, under Jimmy Garoppolo, I suppose, has been the defense must play very well. And when that happens, the offense does enough. But with a few exceptions withstanding, in big games, the defense will let up for a moment. It might not be a huge moment. It might not be for many, many plays, but it'll happen. Last year in the NFC Championship game, you could point to Jacoby Tart dropping the interception as an example, and then the Rams scoring the touchdown drive. And when that happened, the offense wasn't able to step up. So I don't know if that's the case anymore. We haven't really seen a situation in the playoffs to find out if that's the case or not. So who knows? It'll be a fascinating kind of story to see as it unfolds.
Yeah, 100%. I think so far, the Niners under Brock Purdy have been pretty consistent. They've been scoring in the 30s. They got up into the 40s this game. I think if they had not come out real flat, they probably would have scored 50 on this team, like, pretty easily. But they had a little bit of a slow start. They couldn't convert. I mean, they kicked 3 field goals in the first half. They'd have scored 50 plus if they had any gumption about them early in the game. But, you know, it took them a while. Obviously, as the playoffs go on, they're going to have to not do that so much, like, because both offensive and defensive units are going to have to come out a little bit sharper against teams, because as they get further along, theoretically, the teams are going to be better that they're going to face off against. So it's just going to be something to watch out for. And then, of course, the question will be, can Purdy continue to lead this team to be even better than you would have expected them to be coming into the season? And so that will be a long and interesting conversation, and we'll see how that goes throughout the rest of this time. So Akshay, any final thoughts as we wrap up this one for the wild card weekend?
I'll say a quick thing about whatever's happening in the final wild card game, which is that no matter what, it's going to be an absolutely wondrous feeling next Sunday to either send Tom Brady home or to shut up the Cowboys. But beyond that, I'm just going to continue to say what I've been saying at the end of these episodes for everyone listening, but also for myself, just to keep things in perspective as to how ridiculous it is to see what's happening with the 49ers this year, and how, like, you know, sometimes when you're in the moment, it's hard to appreciate just what's going on and the magnitude and scope of it all. So I'll just say enjoy the ride, because right now it's going, and who knows when it'll stop. But this is something to keep in your memory, because this has been a special season so far.
Yeah, 100%. On that as well. Well said, sir. By the way, it's not looking pretty unlikely that it's going to be the Buccaneers at this point, but it can happen. But the Cowboys are driving already up by 3 scores or 4 scores or whatever, but they can't kick, so there's that whole thing. Breaking news when he makes a field goal or an extra point, I guess. All right, so thank you, as always, for listening to this episode of the Niner Noise Podcast, part of the Fansided Podcast Network. Please continue to check out ninernoise.com for all your latest 49ers news and analysis. Lots of good things coming up from our friends and fellow contributors on the site as we work through the playoffs and we talk about all the things that are going on, and also, you know, other things that might be related to 49ers stuff that's coming in the future, like the offseason and all that kind of fun stuff. And of course, be sure to rate and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen. And please share it with all your fellow 49er fan friends. So until next time, let's sound the horn, 49ers.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.